All right, could you please read the council item title for item 220?
Request of Victoria Taft to address council regarding Mayor Adams.
Ms. Taft, welcome to the City Council. Please give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Victoria Taft, and I live and work and vote in the city of Portland. And I've been before you before asking that the mayor resign because of the disgrace that he's brought upon the city by his acts of, to enumerate them, grooming a teenager to have sex with him, allegedly kissing and fondling the teenager in a city hall bathroom, going to the teenager's 18th birthday as a way to celebrate his becoming legal so he could have sex with him, slandering the man who dared to bring it up before the election and ending his chances for higher political office, and lying to voters about these incidents because he knew he wouldn't be elected otherwise. I passed along nearly 400 emails to Mayor Adams and the rest of the council from concerned citizens of Portland and Oregon to ask the mayor to resign, and you've ignored them so far. I know people have called on the mayor to ask him to resign. They've phoned his office, and the calls go ignored. I know the mayor has gone before the council each and every week and conducted some business as usual with those of us in the audience week after week wanting him to leave and asking him to leave because what he has done has disgraced the city of Portland. And I know the mayor has gone before groups of people and apologized, and the apologies really mean nothing without action. The ultimate act of contrition, Sam, the teachable moment that you've spoken of, is to resign. But the mayor, and I dare say the council, want our attention away from the mayor's unethical and probably illegal activities and want us to sell us ballparks and teams and soccer venues. And boy, it would be so much easier to be here today to talk about those things and to actually cheer for something. But it's really not what we have to do today. We actually have to ask you to do the right thing and to resign. We will always question your motives because it's perfectly reasonable that we do so. We've seen what you will do to a teenage kid. We've seen what you'll do to the voters to win an election. Why would we trust anything you say? Recently, a reporter from a local paper called me and asked me why I would criticize the mayor. "Aren't you being an opportunist?" he asked. And I laughed. And I said, "What an irony. Questioning the motives of a citizen who says out loud what the mayor does, and I'm an opportunist. Questioning the mayor about grooming a teenager to have sex with him, and I'm the opportunist. Questioning the mayor about having sex with the teenager, and I'm the opportunist. Questioning the mayor about lying to win an election, and I'm supposedly the opportunist here." Those same reporters ask if the people with me today and those who have been here in weeks past are in some sort of concerted conspiracy to see the mayor go. They're worried about a conspiracy of citizens who stand up for what's right, and right in front of them they have a conspiracy to steal an election on false pretenses and a conspiracy of silence with a teenager so that nobody would find out you had sex with him. Mayor Adams, the city is riven with your drama. You've embarrassed us all and the entire state, and you need to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Could you please read the title for Council Item 221?
Request of Bill White to address Council regarding prayer for the city and council.
Mr. White, welcome to the City Council. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you very much. My name is Bill White. I'm just a citizen of Portland, Oregon, and it's a pleasure to come before you now. I have no words of criticism. I just come just to pray and ask God's protection and blessing on all of you because we live in a dire time where we'll continue to see upheaval, and unfortunately, I think we may see civil unrest if things do not improve. So I just want to ask the invocation of God's blessing on all of you, that you have the God's wisdom, God's knowledge, and God's understanding of what you have to do, because you guys do have tough jobs, and I just don't want God to frown upon Portland. I want the city to be blessed. So, Father, we thank you right now that we have an opportunity to pray for the city council and the city of Portland. There are many things that have gone on, Father, I know that you're not pleased with, but we're asking for forgiveness of all sin that we've committed, Father. And we know that sin is just basically not doing what you have instructed us to do. So, Father, we ask that you bless the city of Portland, bless the city council, Father, bless every citizen in Portland, Father, because they have to make tough decisions, Father. And we ask you that you just lead and guide the city council now, Father. Protect them, Father. We ask that you give them wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of how to conduct the best business possible, Father. And we ask that righteousness reigns in the streets of Portland, Father. And we bind the power of the devil now over the city, and we release the anointing and the power of God in the city. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor. All right, Carla, could you please read the title for Council Item 222?
Request of P.J. Mulcahy to address Council regarding Mayor Adams.
Mr. Mulcahy, welcome to the City Council.
Good morning.
You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
P.J. Mulcahy, Sergeant P.J. Mulcahy, U.S. Air Force. Sam White served this country for 6 years in the 60s, and I came here today as a veteran. I'm here to condemn your actions and disrespect and contempt for the Word of God, the Constitution, and this uniform. We served honorably so you could hold your public office and follow the rules of honesty and morality. Your nonchalant, so what, in your face attitude in a statement at the press after your election, didn't think I would survive, so I just lied, is the ultimate arrogant disrespect to me, this uniform of people who wear it. The Constitution requires truth, honor, and respect. Unfortunately, you have none of these qualities. You are a fraud posing as a mayor, a disgrace to the office of mayor and the citizens of Portland and Oregon. Do you listen to the public comment? Did you hear the lady that was raped by a sexual predator who fears what you may represent? Did you hear her emotional plea from her heart for you to resign? Or the professional lady from the gay community who articulated for the gay community for you to for your ouster? Businessmen, seniors, talk show hosts, Lars Larson, Victoria Taft. Is it getting any clearer for you? Your resignation is the only acceptable apology for your misconduct. Fox, ABC, NBC, CNN, the national media reported last week the most undesirable city in America is Portland, Oregon. Your deception and alleged criminal conduct is outrageous and reflects on our city, state, and nation. You are an insult to the reputations of myself and honest citizens of the city. You are an admitted fraud of the election, deceptive habitual liar, under investigation by the Oregon Attorney General and the Justice Department for criminal sexual misconduct with a minor with a supporting cast of counselors. How can it get any worse? The public indictments are in, Sam. From 9 major publications, respected members of the gay community, the police union, citizens and veterans, it is clear it's time for a new mayor. And when the indictments are come down, you have nowhere to hide. There will be no place for you to hide or excuses of ignorance. You all know the facts. You are public servants. Do your job under the authority of the Constitution I serve for. It begins with a no vote for Sam Adams. At least you can do is place him on administrative leave until these investigations are complete. That's the procedure for any other city employee. And like the pastor said this morning, we do pray for you. That's what we need in this town. We need prayer. We need guidance from God Almighty. I learned that in my life at a low point. God came into my life and made a new man out of me, and I suggest you do that too. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Could you read it, Council Item 223?
Request of Holly Bacon to address Council regarding Mayor Adams.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. Please give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Okay. Excuse me. Good morning. My name is Holly Bacon, and I was born and raised in Portland. I'm a graduate of Parkrose High School and of the University of Oregon. I live in the area and care very much about the city of Portland. I'm here this morning to ask for the resignation of Sam Adams. As Mr. Adams seems unwilling to do the right thing and leave office, I implore the City Council members to insist on his immediate resignation. Maybe you have a disconnect with an average citizen like myself and do not understand the impact your actions have on my family and community. Mr. Adams, it might be helpful for you to hear what your unethical, dishonest, and disgraceful choices mean. And yes, they were all choices that you freely made. Let me try to enlighten you. I have a teenager, and the thought of a 40-something-year-old man mentoring my child in the way you chose to mentor Beau Breedlove is in itself enough reason for your political career to be completely over. But you must have known that, or else why would you have lied about the event? How can anyone believe what you say about anything? You have shown yourself to be quite an effective liar, even going so far as to play the victim when your lie was uncovered. Your dishonest, self-serving attacks on Bob Ball exposes a ruthlessness to go after anyone that gets in the way of your ambitions. In fact, the sympathy you created by playing the poor, innocent, middle-aged gay man might have actually helped to win you votes. Another lie you chose to foster to serve your needs. City Council members, how could you all know these things that have been admitted by Mr. Adams and still remain silent? So, abusing a teenager, lying to the public to win an election, slandering a man who tried to expose the truth, to name just a few of the events we, the public, know about. Then refusing to do the honorable thing and resign. Not the actions of any type of leader I want representing me or the great city of Portland. We teach our children that there are consequences for the choices they make. A child cheats on a test, they receive an F. In college, if someone cheats on an exam, they could get thrown out of school. You drive drunk, you get your license taken away. All these events could be apologized for, even explained in some cases. It doesn't matter. A consequence is a consequence. Excuse me. But you, Mr. Adams, don't think the consequences apply to you? Your example brings disgrace and dishonor to Portland. I hope that you resign. And City Council, I hope that you help him to do the right thing and resign. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Could you read item 224?
Request of Michael O'Gara to address council regarding proposed parking fee increase.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. Please just give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes. That clock in front of you will help you keep time.
Okay, thank you very much. It's not often that parking is kind of a lightning subject in a meeting. My wife and I are longtime Portland residents. My name is Michael O'Gara, and we've always lived in close into the city in the Northeast in the last 10 years in the Johns Landing area. And one of Portland's main attractions, I think, is that it's always had a very viable downtown area, especially in the evening, with shops and businesses and so forth open. And we, on a regular basis, 3 or 4 times a month, go downtown for dinner and a movie or a theater. And when parking fees extended until 7 p.m., we pretty much stopped going downtown for dinner. We eat in local restaurants, and we still go down for a movie because they usually start 7 or the theater usually starts around 8. Now, by extending parking fees to 9 p.m., we probably will no longer attend downtown events or shop in the evenings. With current economic conditions, I think our downtown businesses cannot absorb another loss of customers. Many have already gone broke, and several more, I know, of 5 to 10% loss in customer base would be significant to their survival. With light rail and the new bus ball and other construction, I think you, our city leaders, should be creating ways of encouraging rather than discouraging the evening use of our downtown area. I've spoken to many others about this increase, both in the hourly rate and the extended hours, and they feel as I do. It is like when you have a bad experience in a store or a restaurant. Most people just don't go back. They don't complain. They just don't go back. And I think that's what you're going to find here. Not many people will say much, but all of a sudden, people won't be returning in the evenings. They won't be coming downtown. Last night, one of the local news stations was comparing Portland's parking fees to many other cities of like size and a little bit larger. Most were fairly comparable to our current fees, but I think only one had extended hours. Most cut their hours, parking hours off at 6 p.m. so people can attend evening events. The additional fee itself is not so excessive, you know, probably $4 or $5. But I can do the same thing. I can go to Lloyd Center, I can go to movie theaters and the suburban malls, and I can shop in the suburban malls. So to maintain the viability of the city by adding on this fee, I think you're really going to harm it. And I just hope as city leaders and politicians, you take a long-term look at the serious repercussions of this decision and not just take a short-term look at trying to gain a little bit more revenue in the short term. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. If it's okay with the City Council, I'd like to, we will do the time, excuse me, the consent agenda, and then out of courtesies for some guests to move item 237 up quickly before the time certain. That's all right. 237 is to accept a donation from the Palau Association and Churches of the Greater Portland Area. So let's do the consent agenda first. Is there anyone that would like to pull any item off today's consent agenda?
Mayor, I'd like to pull item 233 and have this item returned to my office.
Unless objection, item 233 is returned to Commissioner Fish's office. Do you need to read the title?
Yes, we should. 233, report to council on trails needs assessment.
So moved. All right. Is there any other item that anyone else would like to pull off the consent agenda?
Oh, Commissioner Saltzman, you had 236.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'd like to have 236 pulled off the consent and returned to my office.
Could you please read the title of the item?
Amend contract with GSI Water Solutions, Inc. for as-needed services to support implementation of the City Water Pollution Facility Control Permit.
Unless there's objection by the City Council. So moved.
And did we already pull
236 has been pulled. Yeah, 233 has been pulled.
And wasn't there another one on Parks Temporary Employees, the OMF one? Or is that a regular agenda item?
That's the 245 regular agenda,
thank
I believe.
You.
Okay. All right, is anyone here to testify on the consent agenda? All right, then Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved, and unless there's council objection, I'd like to hear item 237. Carla, could you please read the title?
Accept donation of $100,000 from the Palau Association and churches in the greater Portland area.
Could we please have representatives of the Palau organization and folks from the churches? Hi, Megan. Please come forward. We need to do an amendment that clarifies how the money is to be distributed to Home Again Mentoring, to the Portland Public Schools Transition Center of $60,000, and to the East Portland School Districts to be used for educational opportunities.
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to amend to clarify the distribution of the funds from the Palau organization and churches. Any discussion? Anyone wish to testify on the amendment? Carla, could you please call the roll on the amendment?
Fritz?
This is just on an amendment. Then we'll get to you, I promise. Yeah.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Amendment is approved. A couple of words of introduction. Schools, homes, churches serve as the core of the community for many, and your work and the work of the collective effort of the season of service has helped the city in countless ways. I was able to participate in a cleanup crew at Franklin High School as part of the season of service, and I've been at a number of events, and it is an amazing gift that you've given the city, not just the financial resources today, but the gift of time and attention. Your devotion to actions to help with the physical needs of our community are amazing. You have truly shown that Portland is better together. And as I said at some earlier gatherings, it's amazing how many people were working on, for example, local schools that were not residents of Portland. So I really appreciate it, and we wanted to have you here to thank you in person and give you an opportunity to speak as well.
Thank you. My name is Megan Palau, and I'm here representing the Louise Palau Association, and it's been an exciting effort for us to get to be a part of the Home Again Mentoring Project, as well as this effort to address the dropout rate in Portland schools. And I want to thank the staffs of the mayor and Commissioner Fish's staff. Especially want to thank Carmen Rubio, and I also want to thank Sally Erickson from the Bureau of Housing, who's worked with us on this, and also Jane Ames from the mayor's office. They've been responsive, they've been patient and persistent as they've worked this process with us, and very professional, and I want to commend them for their work. Giving away money can sometimes be complicated, and they've walked us through this process, and really appreciate that. I do want to acknowledge, though, that the Palau Association acted as the catalyst for this, that it really was the churches who had the vision for this and the congregations who gave sacrificially during the Christmas season to do something for the city and for those less fortunate and struggling. And I'm honored today to have Pastor Mark Goodwin from Portland First Church of the Nazarene representing the churches.
Welcome. Thank you. We're delighted to partner with the city. We hope this is just the prelude to a long time of service between us. And thank you for being willing to partner with us. And I simply represent all of the churches, and we are delighted to be a part of this. Thank you for partnering with us.
Thank you.
I'm Sally Erickson, the manager of the Ending Homelessness Initiative, and I'm extremely grateful for this gift. This is a wonderful reason to be here in front of City Council this morning to accept this gift, and for the ongoing commitment and partnership of the association and the faith community as we continue to work together to end homelessness in Portland and Multnomah County. Because of your leadership and the season of service, we've achieved more than we could ever have imagined. The faith community has truly become our partner in the work to end homelessness. And while we're here to accept this extremely generous financial gift from the association, I also want to recognize the gift of your service and volunteers and the one-on-one work that the faith community has given to people in need in our community. In August 2008, the city and county held our most successful Portland Homeless Connect event in conjunction with the Palau Association City Fest on the waterfront. City Fest not only supported the event, but their volunteers played a really important part in that event. Dozens of churches have recently replicated the model of Homeless Connect to create Compassion Connect that provides medical and dental services to thousands of people in need across the region. This is a model that will definitely be replicated across the country. Individual churches have partnered for years with nonprofit organizations, including Join and Human Solutions, and Gene DeMaster, the executive director, is here today from Human Solutions. And these faith communities and churches provide direct assistance to homeless families and street outreach to homeless individuals. And finally, the Home Again Mentoring Program, which is one of the recipients of the funding today, promises to be a national model of how government or community partners, including the business community, and private foundations that have contributed funds for rent assistance and the faith community can join together to have a direct positive impact on families in need. So thank you very much. And thank you, Gene and Human Solutions, for taking the lead on the Home Again Mentoring Program. It's going exceedingly well.
Do you want to say a few words, Gene?
I think you know that on any night in Portland, over 3,000 people are homeless, and over 55% of those people are people and families. We know that to solve that problem, certainly the nonprofits can't do it alone, and I don't think the government can do it alone either. So I think this kind of partnership with the faith-based community and particularly the Luis Palau Association with government and with nonprofit agencies, that's the only way we're going to find homes for the thousands of people that are homeless every night. This particular program, the Home Again Mentoring Program, has proven very successful in terms of bringing homeless people and providing rent assistance so they don't have to be homeless any longer, but providing the support of the church community to help them receive the long-term solution so they don't have to be homeless and they can overcome that problem and put it in their past forever. So we are very grateful to the city for providing support and particularly to the Luis Palau Association for partnering with us to give these families a real chance to not have to be homeless and to not have the children in these families grow up in poverty, but get real solutions so they're not homeless and they're not poor any longer. We really thank you.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I also want to acknowledge the role that former Mayor Tom Potter played in helping to launch this initiative. But 6 months ago, I had never met Luis Palau, much less his children, Megan and Kevin. I was aware that Luis Palau drew hundreds of thousands of people to the waterfront, but frankly, it wasn't really my thing, and I hadn't actually been to one of his rallies. About 4 months ago, the mayor and I were on, I guess it was last summer. Time flies. The mayor and I, mayor-elect and I, actually were on the stage in front of 100,000 people, which was quite an experience. And something has happened here that I think needs to be acknowledged. As long as I've lived in Portland, there has been, in my view, a divide between the faith community, particularly what I would call the more fundamentalist but evangelical wing of the faith community, and the city of Portland. And it has been my impression that what has frequently been accentuated in that relationship is the differences. And there have been some people, both in government and in the faith community, who, in my opinion, have been very effective at emphasizing those differences. And as we know, it's easy to pick a fight. It's much harder to actually find the common ground. I know that in my marriage. So I have watched this relationship evolve. And I will tell you, I've watched it evolve with some skepticism. And I think the skepticism was shared by many folks in the faith community, as I've heard expressed at various gatherings. But what has happened, I think, is that this idea of a season of service has such a powerful resonance with all of us, regardless of our faith and regardless of our past, that it has provided the sort of baseline for a new relationship of understanding and mutual respect. And the season of service, as I am fond of saying, is one of three of the most beautiful words in the English language. And if the season of service was a rose, we hope it's a perennial and not an annual. And I'm so pleased that the Palau organization and Pastor Rick McKinley and all of the folks involved have said this is going to be an annual event. And what does it mean? It means that in addition to our existing partners in the nonprofit community and in the business community, the faith community has now stepped up and said, we want to be part of the solution. And as you know, during these lean times, government can't do it all. In fact, we can do less than we had hoped, and the need, as Gene has documented, is going through the roof. So to have the faith community step up and say, we want to be part of the solution is very powerful. Is very powerful. And to those who are concerned that a mentoring program with a church involvement is going to involve proselytizing or transgressing the lines between church and state, we've put very clear boundaries and guidelines in place. And I think those are fears that people should focus on. We should be concerned about them because these are lines that need to be honored for legal and constitutional reasons. I'm satisfied they have been observed. This mentoring program is making a difference. You know, there are people experiencing homelessness and there are people at risk of homelessness. And what the mentoring program is doing is going upstream and saying, those at families at risk, we're going to try to help avert a calamity. Because we know what happens when they enter homelessness. We know what happens to the families. We know what happens to the children. We know what happens to the sort of collateral damage. So as the housing commissioner for the city, I want to, from the bottom of my heart, thank all of you for your great work on this. And I hope this inspires others to step up and be helpful and to help in this time of need. I want to close with a quote of Dr. King on service that we're all familiar with, but I think captures the essence of what you're doing. And that was, at one point, Dr. King said of service, everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. And I think that absolutely beautifully captures this partnership. And we are grateful for the $100,000, which will make a difference in the lives of families and children. And we look forward to building on this relationship going forward. And again, thank you for your service to our great city.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on item 237? All right, thank you again very much. The money is going to very good use. We will now have a
vote on its motion.
I know that. Sorry. We will now have a vote on the resolution. Commissioner Fritz is making sure that I'm on top of everything this morning, which I appreciate. I've only had 3 cups of coffee. Please call the roll.
Fritz. Thank you so much, not only for providing the money, and it is important to recognize that money is needed in these tough times, too, to provide service, to provide funding for the programs which, like Human Solutions, and also that the Palau organization has been organizing the community cleanups for many years, and I've participated in them. They're really fun and also constructive that you get to drive by or walk by a school for the rest of the year and remember that you helped to fix it up. So thank you very much to all. Aye.
I'd also like to just acknowledge the city staff that's played an invaluable role in this and appreciate, Megan, you calling them out. Sally Erickson from the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, Carmen Rubio from my office, and Jane Ames from the mayor's office have done great work and been great partners. Proud to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Also like to recognize city staff, Carmen, others, and the great Jane Ames in my office. Thank you for your work. Aye. 237 is approved. We will now move to the time certain at 9:30. Item number 225, Carla, would you please read the title for item 225?
Accept report and recommendations from Major League Soccer AAA Baseball Task Force.
Thank you. I'm going to make some opening remarks and ask you to be patient, because I'm going to spend just a little bit of time going over the issues of why I'm supportive, why I've been working on this over the past year and a half, 2 years with Commissioner Leonard. Why invest in sports? Sports have the power to bring people together, diverse groups, unlike almost any other community pursuit. Great sports teams can gather across race, gender, income, and background to bring a community together around a common interest and a common point of pride. Sports also have the power to inspire youth to pursue greatness through teamwork, and to inspire older athletes to further and challenge themselves and to keep going. And sports promote in the community healthy lifestyles and family-friendly opportunities. Major League sports teams can do all this and more. Why soccer? Portland, and in fact all of Oregon, has a long-standing soccer heritage. Whether it's our collegiate clubs like the University of Portland, our youth soccer clubs, or the tens of thousands of fans who flocked to Portland for the Women's Cup, World Cup, and other international events. This region's soccer community has proven their loyalty and love for the game. We can build on this base of the local popularity of soccer, and as you know, it is my goal for Portland to become the most sustainable city in the world, and in doing so, become the hub of the nation's green and clean tech economic revolution. And to become the most sustainable economy in the world, Portland must build its international profile. And the international language that is spoken most is the language of football. Soccer is the most played sport on earth. Portland has the opportunity to join with more than a dozen cities across America and 100 cities across the globe to rally around their professional soccer clubs. Why now? It's a tough economy, and now is the time that we need to take smart risks and invest in Portland's future. And I recall a touchstone one of the emails that I've gotten, and I appreciate all the emails that have come in on both sides of this issue. The personal address that comes to my machine is what everyone's using, and it's been great. When the machine is not smoking and ready to explode, it's been great to hear both sides. And one of the emails really reminded me that in the depths of the last great economic sort of global catastrophe, there was another major recreational investment in this region, except it didn't have a private partner, and that was Timberline Lodge. And the many trails and the many recreational improvements that were made by the WPA, all with taxpayer dollars. What we're considering today, I think, is very much in keeping with that, except we have tens of millions of dollars on the table from a private investor. And our private investor, Merritt Paulson and the Paulson family, has already demonstrated their willingness to work with us to think creatively and be resourceful. We have a partner with deep capital resources to commit to this venture, and we have a partner who is willing to take on the risks that the private sector must take on at this time, and to make sure that the deal is one that is fair and considerate to the city's needs to be fiscally conservative and very risk adverse. Why this deal? This deal between the city and the private sector operator was shaped in large part by a citizens task force that oversaw every step of the conversation. Every member of the city council up here had an opportunity to see their choices put on the task force. And that task force was armed with a set of guiding principles approved by this city council. And they set forth conditions that we have met in this proposal. No risk to the city's basic services of the city. No reductions in basic services to fund the baseball or our soccer facilities. A deal must include a significant private investment. The baseball stadium should be located in an area of the city that is easily accessible by light rail, bus, and other alternative modes. And if the project involves touching Memorial Coliseum, the city must continue to memorialize veterans. So this is also the most cost-effective way to bring a Major League Soccer team to Portland. When you look at the amount of money spent on soccer stadiums across the United States, you will see that this equals the lowest cost soccer stadium. And in many cases, we're getting two stadiums for the price that other cities are paying for one soccer stadium. We don't hang our hat on this, that this is a big economic moneymaker for the city, but it is a decent economic return. 80% of the attendees, for example, of AAA to the AAA ballpark, to the Beavers, come from outside the city of Portland. And this also has the opportunity to be an incredibly green endeavor, given that 65% of people who attend Beavers games do so by transit. And by locating the AAA ballpark in the most transit-rich part of the city, in the Rose Quarter, we can see that that number hit even higher. So it's for these reasons that I'm proud to stand with my colleague, Randy Leonard, and the deal that we have negotiated, and look forward to the healthy debate that's about to ensue. Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I would only make a couple brief remarks. I think you covered the details well. I would just say more globally that Portland is not the city it is because its leaders shied away from making hard decisions. We are the city we are. We look the way we look. We attract the businesses and people that move here because of the very, very tough decisions, such as going to be made today, that have been made in the past. Thus, we have Pioneer Courthouse Square. Thus, we have parks, we have attractions, amenities, we have the Blazers, all of which were decisions not unlike being made today by prior councils to make tough choices that not everybody thought at the time was a good idea. I would also point to light rail. Some now assume light rail is a success and actually lobby for it in their areas. I remember in the 90s when the citizenry was up in arms and angry at the city council and angry at the legislature for supporting light rail. We now have lines that go almost to Washington up Interstate Avenue, by the way, created only through the use of urban renewal dollars. We have light rail that goes to the west. We have light rail that's almost completed that will connect Lentz and other parts of East Portland to the heart of the city. This is a city that is what it is today because of decisions like that we are going to be making today. It is hard to calculate the impact of having the energy that is brought, and I would only compare it to the Blazers. If you could compare the success of the Blazers and the way it's brought this community together, those kinds, I think, of activities that will be brought with not only Major League Soccer, but I think a re-energized Portland Beavers located at the Rose Quarter in a beautiful stadium that will host concerts and other venues, do more for the city than just bring in dollars. But let there be no mistake about it. They do bring in dollars. I would argue that those that are here today to argue against using urban renewal dollars for PGE Park or the AAA Stadium need only talk to the restaurants and the shops that are in and around where the stadiums are that will benefit mightily from the infusion of suburbanites and other folks who come in to buy meals and clothing and other items that they wouldn't bother to do were they not going to a professional soccer game or a Beavers game or, for that matter, a Blazers game. I'm quite certain that when we hear from the county, they won't reveal to you the amount of income tax that is generated and the amount of revenues that they receive from those activities. But as one of my colleagues said today, just a few moments ago, it's easy to pick a fight. It's much harder to find common ground. That is a good example of that here today. You'll see played out. There is and should be common ground. There should be no reason for disagreement because this is a good effort for not just fans of soccer and baseball, but our entire community. Thank you.
All right. We're going to get first hear from the chair of the task force, the Citizen Task Force, Steve Mazur, and then we're going to have an overview of exactly what we're considering today from Steve Janik, Ken Russ, Dave Logsdon, and Lou Bowers. Good morning, Chair. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and all of you, I hope. Good morning. I'm Steve Mazur. I'm a professor of public management and public policy at Willamette University's MBA program. I want to thank you for the opportunity of allowing me to serve on this task force and share it. and to be able to sort of report to you sort of what our findings are. There's three things I'd like to do, really two. I want to summarize the process that we went through and then summarize the recommendations. You have the written report, I believe, so I'm not going to go into great detail on that. First, I want to say that the task force of 18 people was a remarkably diverse task force of very hardworking folks. Even when early on we realized we had a lot to do and switched from meeting every other week to on a weekly basis, people showed up all the time. When we decided that there were some complex finance issues that we needed to dig into, we took the financial experts, that people with financial expertise on the task force, and created a subcommittee, and they met even more frequently and reported back to the task force. So you got an awful lot of value out of this set of folks who took it very seriously and worked, you know, very, very diligently and very hard on this for a couple of months. And I think the other value you got out of this, by the nature of the folks that you put on the task force, we kind of reached out. I mean, people from different parts of the city would contact task force members. People from task force would contact other people, not just within the city, but experts around the country. I spoke to a person in the Midwest who's had over a dozen years of experience dealing with Major League Soccer on both stadium construction side and proponent side. I spoke to attorneys for Major League Soccer teams. So you got a lot of expertise that was brought, you know, to the table. And always we were asking, I think, what are the questions we should be asking? What are the landmines out there? And how do we provide the best advice to all of you? So I think you had smart people of good intention who worked pretty hard on this. We started with a charge that, when you look at it, basically boils down to, you know, look at what the proponents are suggesting, assess their projections on finances. I mean, at the end of the day, it boils down to, are they going to be able to pay the rent that goes into the City Spectator Fund? Are their projections on ticket sales that generate revenues, are those reasonable? Assess those things. Look at the proposed stadium projects. Are those things reasonable? And so on. Look at, sort of tear it apart and put it back together again, and then advise you on how to go forward. And by and large, that's pretty much what we did. So what was the process? Well, we had this series of meetings. We heard a great deal of information. It was close to overwhelming. We heard from the proponent and the proponent's consultants. We heard from city staff. We heard from the consultants that the city hired, always assessing and evaluating projections, costs, and so forth, a lot of financial information. And other issues as well that we sort of worked our way through to sort of try and formulate the advice that we wanted to give you. At the very first meeting, then Mayor-elect Adams sort of pointed out that there were people at the beginning who he knew on the task force that were likely opposed, and some favored and some neutral. And I kind of put myself in the neutral camp at that point. And I, as the chair, sort of said, well, and I said this to the task force, and I believe they agreed. I said, look, I'm going to aim to try and get us to a consensus at the end of the day on this. And there are two reasons why I took that strategy. One is because I felt that you and the city, even the proponents, all the parties involved would be better served if this group came to a consensus on whatever it decided to come to a consensus on. Secondly, the process that we use to come to a consensus, while it's a little bit more time-consuming, and if you look at the videos of the meetings, I think you'll see the occasional frustration that crossed a few of the task force members' faces. But the process of getting to a consensus is one where you really dig pretty deeply into what the members' concerns are and try and tease out those concerns to get a more complete and thorough assessment of all the issues. I wanted people to walk away from the table not saying, well, you know, my issue was heard, but I lost. I wanted them to walk away and say, my issue was heard, and it was addressed, and it was addressed in a way that was at least satisfactory. I can live with it, and indeed, as many as possible walking away saying, you know, I support that. That's good advice to the council. So we sought a consensus, and quite honestly, to my amazement, we kind of got there at the end. Within a few weeks of the end of the process, we took a straw poll, and I think we surprised ourselves to discover that I think it was 17-1 on a very informal poll, are you inclined to support this or not? After all we'd heard, people were generally inclined to support it. So then the devil's sort of in the details. Well, why did you support it, and what are your remaining concerns? So we spent the final couple of weeks digging into the basis for any reservation and could we address them in what turns out to be the conditions that you see in the recommendation. About 2 weeks before the end, we had a period of public comment, which was very helpful. We heard from about 35 people who came, largely in support, but five or six who were opposed and very articulate in their concerns, and it was really very helpful. And their issues we then had not paid enough attention to, and we did try to, and those found their way into the final recommendation that you've received. So let me summarize the recommendations. They're kind of in categories, and the most significant one was the financial issues. This was a group that was very averse to putting the city at risk. I mean, very resistant to putting the city at risk. Not only was there concern that no dollars that might be used for public programs for basic city services funded by the general fund, that either current or projected programs, I mean, we argued over wording here, that no dollars be spent on this project from the general fund. Not only that, but the general fund shouldn't be put at risk to the extent possible if the general fund has to back any bonds that are sold. I mean, it was, this group said, okay, this is a good project, the projections are reasonable, if we can do it, if it pencils out, we should, but don't put the city at risk. And you see that theme struck through the first set of recommendations. I would say that as a general principle, the concept of using city spectator funds to support the project, there was a general consensus that that's an okay idea because the funds that flow into the city spectator fund are funds from the rents paid on the use of the facilities, on fees and taxes or surcharges, on tickets that people who go to the events pay, parking that's paid for by people who go to the events and park in city-owned garages. The flow of money goes into the city spectator fund from the people who are benefiting from the investment that you're considering making. And to the extent that the people who are benefiting are bearing a significant portion of the cost, that's a reasonable principle. So I don't think we had any question about was it okay to use city spectator funds for this. We weren't asked to evaluate whether there were other things that could have been funded by this just to look at this project on its merits. That principle was important, and we accepted that. The issue was, well, generally the general fund might back the guarantees on bonds issued by this flow of revenues into the spectator fund. And that's where we said, you know, our advice is find a way to guarantee that. Find a way to guarantee through private parties. And I think the task force would be pleased to see that the proposed deal that's on the table does have the proponent coming up with guarantees for those bonds, for the life of the bonds. I think that would be consistent with our advice, and members of the task force would be pretty satisfied or pleased to see that that happens. The amount of bonding available from the spectator fund, that figure's been kind of a moving target throughout as you change different assumptions and different features of the whole proposal come up. And the fact that the last figure I saw was up at around $31 million, I think. Again, the presumption is that those funds aren't going to be used for other things. They could be used for this kind of a project. No city services are at risk. But as that dollar value increases, it makes that guarantee all the more important, and that guarantee be negotiated in a way that the city feels is really secure. 25 years is a long time to carry a guarantee. But there are ways of doing that, and you know, our advice is that those doing the negotiations make sure that's a really tight guarantee. There was one of the things I heard time and again from people in the area, and many of us did outside the area, is a classic problem in these projects is cost overruns. So we said either at very least cap the city exposure to cost overruns. The concern about are the bonds saleable, and the fact that the bonds may be available to be placed privately is a great advantage on this. It's consistent with that advice. On the urban renewal issue, I would say that I didn't sense on the task force, and it's sort of the longest paragraph in here, I didn't sense on the task force any concern with the concept of using urban renewal funds for this purpose, that it was not an unreasonable way to use urban renewal funds. We were mindful with representatives from the different neighborhoods that could be affected serving on the task force that there are alternative ways to spend the funds. But the task force, I think, ultimately reached the conclusion that this is not an open checkbook, spend as much of those urban renewal dollars as you want. But the neighborhoods appeared to be willing to commit a portion of what the bonding capacity was of those districts to this project. And since all of you are involved in the process of making that decision, the Portland Development Commission is involved in that process, and the neighborhoods themselves are involved in the process of making those decisions, the task force basically said, well, if that process concludes that this is a good use of those funds, then that's fine because the right people are involved and who know the best use of those funds. I would actually say probably toward the end of the meetings, the most contentious issue involved the use of Open Space Public Park, and you're going to hear from another member of the task force, Mike Houck, who has sent you a letter as well. So I'm not going to dwell on that. And to the extent that a new baseball park winds up not in an open space park area but in the Rose Quarter, that issue is sort of addressed in a way. I mean, the underlying premise is the view that any city-owned land is valuable and shouldn't be treated as sort of something that's zero cost and the city can contribute it, especially if it's open-source parkland where we have an increasing population and neighborhoods of the city that are not well-served by parks. And that should be a serious consideration in your decision about where to locate infrastructure. There were other issues that you'll see there involving memorializing the veterans, some jobs and labor-related issues, but I think that covers the highlights.
Questions for Steve?
Well, I just want to say I went to a number of task force meetings and participated. How much I appreciated your leadership, Steve. I mean, you really were the right person to do this because it required a lot of patience and listening skills and collaborative skills, and you displayed all of those, and I don't think the task force could have possibly been successful without your work. So I want to thank you very much for
a
great job.
You did a fantastic job. Thank you.
Thanks.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you to you and all the members of the task force. You have done a good job. It was my understanding that the original charge was to provide input on a preferred site.
It was. I guess that was the original charge. And the original charge really was kind of overwhelming. And we kept trying to dig in and narrow it down and focus on it, and we were even going to set up a subcommittee that would then try and assess the sites. I guess two things happened. I think we decided we had to figure out a way to focus in under this timeline of the soccer league needing a decision. That was one issue. And so we gave priority, and Commissioner Letter advised us on that, to give priority on the soccer issue, but we really couldn't completely separate it out because changing PGE Park meant the Beavers moving and having to have it. But we got to the point of saying we really don't have the time to make a decision on the site. The decision on the site, to some extent, is also a political decision, and that's not our charge or our purview. I mean, you guys are elected to sort of make that decision. But we said, let's spend time talking about criteria, which is why you see in the recommendations, saying, well, if we were in your shoes, these are the set of things we would look at very closely in making the decision. And that's about as far as we could take it. If we had tried to reach a consensus or any kind of decision on site, we couldn't have gotten as far as we did by today.
Thank you. So your recommendation is for us to consider the highest and best use of the land in the Rose Quarter, for example. You didn't do any of that study?
No.
Because of the time allowed. Okay.
No, I mean, we heard some evidence on it, and that's when we became aware that this is going to take a lot more digging and investigation on our part. There were arguments. The two primary sites that were talked about were Lentz and the Rose Quarter. There were good arguments and concerns on both of those, and I think you have that information.
Thank you. And then my final question is on the commitment to jobs, which is one of your conditions.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of discussion on the need to make sure that we have good family wage jobs?
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, we would have liked to have had more time, I think, to talk about all of those issues. I think a lot of that came up primarily as a result of public comment, and the proponents of those concerns approached a number of us individually. And so, yeah, we talked about it, and there is certainly a concern at the minimum that as this project moves forward, it's compliant with the city's fair wage and other kinds of existing statutes. And I think that tried to come through in the final recommendations.
Thank you.
Are there questions of Steve?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to echo my colleagues' comments of thanking you for your service on this task force. And while I wasn't able to attend live, I did have a chance to watch some on cable TV.
It's thrilling.
It's pretty awkward times.
It actually was more interesting than I thought it was.
I got complimented on my attire from a neighbor who watched it on cable TV.
Did your mom?
Let me say you look great on TV.
Thank you.
I had a few questions off of the report, and just to make sure I understand where the committee came down. In your testimony, you talked about the portion of the financing that comes out of an urban renewal district.
Mm.
And this plan contemplates money coming out of urban renewal districts on both sides of the river. One is an established district on the east side. One is a to-be-formed district on the west side. And in your report, you say that that we should take into consideration programs and projects that have been identified and prioritized within the urban renewal districts.
Mm.
I'm just curious, how do we do that in a to-be-determined urban renewal district on the west side?
Well, that's a good question, and part of my answer is the task force, I think, relied on the processes that are in place to make those determinations, meaning to the extent that in the PGE Park venue, as I understand it, and let me say I'm not an expert on urban renewal here, and actually I should have said this earlier, let me also point out that to the extent that we had a variety of different kinds of expertise on the panel, we couldn't have done what we did without the excellent support we had from city staff, Dave Logsdon and his colleagues, and others who were far more knowledgeable, were very critical to helping the task force move along, and that's the case in these urban renewal questions as well. The presumption is that if that urban renewal area in the PGE Park area is going to be expanded to include it in some as yet unspecified boundaries, that the PDC is going to be involved, the local neighborhoods are going to be involved, the major institutions like Portland State, who had a person from Portland State was on the task force, was involved, that is going to happen over the next, ideally, 6 to 18 or 24 months. And in the process of that happening, those decisions will get made. So it's really, the answer is more one of we're relying on the process to produce, you know, that decision, and the sense that the best information we had was with some neighborhood people at the table and so forth. We think this is a good thing within limits. We're willing to see some of the capacity from that neighborhood go toward this project. We didn't come down with a fixed answer on that.
So of all the pieces of the financing, to me, this one seems the most vulnerable in the sense that it is a district to be determined in a process that has not been initiated with potential legal challenges which have not been played. So first, PDC would have to convene a process to establish a district boundaries. Then there'd be some community process about priorities. Then there'd have to be some way to create some increment and capacity, and then, as we've learned from our River District experience, we might even have to survive a LUBA appeal or two, and on and on. So a question I had about the $15 million from a piece of financing on that piece, did the task force consider other alternatives to the $15 million of TIF from a to-be-formed urban renewal district?
Well, two things. First, partly on that issue, I mean, as city council, you are some of the key decision makers in those decisions. In other words, you have significant impact yourselves on what will happen there. And so the task force had confidence in your decision making in that regard. In terms of the $15 million, we looked for every source of money we could come up with, and we couldn't find other sources. I mean, I'm not saying someone else couldn't find it,